Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, my next guest has had, like I said before, an incredible life, has packed so much experience into her 29 years. Today is a big day. She releases not one, but two books, I Believe in You, a picture book for kids, and Believe in Me, a memoir of her life. She joins me in studio now. Deborah Summerin, you're very welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. It's great to have you in. And for somebody who's so, so busy, you have a book launch tonight, you have a full-time job, you're a parent, you have a lot going on. Huge congrats on the books.
Thank you.
That's incredible. Can you tell me, first of all, about the books and what can people expect?
Yeah, so Believing in Me is the memoir and it's really exploring my experience growing up in state care and what that was like. Also getting pregnant with my son when I was 14 and then going on to college after that. And then I Believe in You is this gorgeous picture book about this little girl, Debbie, who doesn't really believe in herself at the start of the book, has people help her, and then by the end of the book, she learns to believe in herself. So it's really about kind of building resilience for kids. So I love it so much. And it's just really lovely for, I think, particularly black little girls to be able to go into Easton's and see that, you know, see
sure.
Book with a black little girl on the cover.
So congratulations. Again, two books out today. Go and check them out. Let's talk about you, because a lot of listeners might be familiar with your story, but for those who aren't, let's find out about you. So where were you born and when did you come to Ireland?
I was born in England, and I would have lived between England and Nigeria till I was 10. And then I moved to Ireland when I was 10.
Yeah. 10?
Yeah.
I always find that's going to be a really tricky age with my young one, you know, because it's a tricky time in your brain and your body and everything, and you're going into the preteens. What was it like when you came to Ireland?
Yeah, it was definitely different. I think my initial kind of experience it kind of impacted how I end up viewing myself, you know.
Sure.
I think there was a lot of things that were going on at the time, and I nearly sort of associated being black with being a bad thing, you know, so very much so focused on trying to assimilate because it would be easier for myself and I'd be able to make more friends. So for years after, I suppose in my 20s, I've had to unravel a lot of that, you know, and learn to embrace who I am, embrace my natural hair, embrace my big lips, embrace my dark skin.
Sure. You came to Ireland with your mother at that time, is that right?
Yeah.
And how was life with your mother?
So me and my mum had a really difficult relationship even before I moved here.
Right.
So my dad was always my protector. So beatings weren't unusual, but when it went too far, my dad would step in. And when we moved here, my dad wasn't there. So the beatings would just get worse and worse. And it was like she was taking out all of her frustration on me. But at the same time, I'm very honest in the book that I was like really pushing the boundaries. From 11, I was, you know, staying out late and drinking and smoking. And that must have been really, really difficult for my mum. So I think she was in the Bible and in Nigerian culture, it's not unheard of to hit your kids. And the Bible actually says if your child is pushing the boundaries, you should hit them. So, you know,
that was what she thought. She thought she was doing the right thing. But yeah. I did read that. Did she suffer with depression as well?
She suffered with depression, yeah. And fibromyalgia, which is like pain in her muscles. So she was having a very difficult time, and I think she was fighting a lot of demons herself. And I say that, you know, I was just kind of collateral damage in all of that. I don't know why, but I think the really nice thing for us is that after I had my son, we had a new relationship. We were better able to communicate with each other. And I really wish I had more time with her that was like that. Because it was nice to have a mom that could help you and guide you through being a first-time parent.
When did you, as a child, enter the care system?
First time was when I was 11.
Okay.
And I would have been in and out of care really until I was about 13. And then I would have permanently stayed in care till I was 18. So when I was 11, the first time I went into care, I'd actually stayed out till midnight, which is like not okay for an 11-year-old. I have a 13-year-old now and I don't know what I'd do if he did that. And thankfully he doesn't do things like that. But I'd stayed out, and I think my mom just wanted to punish me by letting me stay outside for a few hours when I did eventually come home. And she poured some water over the top window to like make it really difficult for me out there. But again, I think she thought I would just stay put and just be freezing. thing and then be like, that was my bit of discipline. But I was freezing, so I went to a friend's house. I didn't want to just stay there all night. So about an hour or so into being in my friend's house, the guards were at the door. And this was a friend my mum wasn't particularly a fan of, so she knew that's probably where I went to. Mm-hmm. And I think she'd called them thinking, oh, they'll bring her home, it'll scare the life out of her, you know, things will get better. But somewhere there, they felt it was actually unsafe to bring me back home. And it was then when I got a medical, because part of going into care, one of the things you do is a medical. When I got a medical, they would have seen scars and bruises on me and asked me about them. And I told them it was because my mum was hitting me, because I didn't want to be hit. You know, even in terms of staying out and things like that, it was escapism because of the reality of what was going on at home. That I was going to get in trouble regardless for going out. You know, she didn't really want me to hang out with my friends. So the longer I stayed out, the later the beating was going to be. So there was a lot of stuff that was going on at that time.
You got pregnant at 14?
I got pregnant at 14.
My days. How did you cope with that? I mean, you're in the care system, right? You're pregnant at 14. How was your mental health around that period?
I think initially I was very much so in denial.
Yeah.
And mainly because of, I'd heard really, I'm really sorry to use the term, like, so when you're in care, you have to move into a specific mother and baby home, which is not like anything like they were in the past, but they're just specific care homes that are for people who are in care who have children. And I'd heard really scary stories about them in terms of not getting great levels of support. The first time you screw up, your baby is taken off you. And that's terrifying for any parent at any age. So I suppose a lot of that was mentally preparing myself for the move and not really knowing how this was all going to go. The only thing I could control in all of this, I suppose, was the education piece, because there's this human that was going to be depending on me, and I was the only person that was going to be able to give him a stable life, and education was the only way I was going to do that. Getting a good education, getting a good job, and I would be able to bring that level of stability to his life so he would have a better life than I did. So yeah, that was one of the things I could control in that situation.
We were talking on the show, I think yesterday, of the importance of having people in your life who lift you up and support you, and the change that can make in your life. You speak about the power of having a circle of allies.
Yeah.
A circle of allies that helped you to stay in school, for example. Can you tell me about them and just what they did for you?
Yeah, so the reason I wanted to write this was around this whole concept of one good adult, right? The kids that are in care homes, they're not always the ones that get a lot of support, because they're probably not going to do much once they leave care, right? Why should we bother with them? And so that's why I'm so thankful to the people who didn't see me that way and somehow still tried for me. So when I was living in a homeless hostel, for example, I didn't want to go to school. I was really embarrassed of where I was going home to. And it was just everyone else is talking about their Paul's Boutique bags and their holidays. And I couldn't empathize with it. I couldn't relate to any of that. It just made me feel sadder. So this woman who was working with me from Focus Ireland, she set up a star chart system. And every time, if I went to school every day for 3 months, I got a piece of my favourite makeup at the end. And there's no other way you could have gotten me to go to school at the time, to be completely honest with you. Because I couldn't afford it.
She knew your hot button. She knew what made you tick.
Exactly. And it was at a time where, like, and it's still not particularly great to get makeup for dark skin in Dublin, yeah, or in Ireland. But at the time, the only places you could really get it was in Brown Thomas. And I couldn't afford that. So it was just things like that where I was finally getting to do normal things and try normal things like that, which is not really normal because you're still living in a homeless hostel. But still, you're still clinging on to those little things that you're able to do as a teenager, and that helped me stay in school. And what happens with a lot of kids is that during that, they'll stop going to school. By the time they're placed in a stable home and they're not moving around so much, they've missed 1 or 2 years of school, and it's too late. They've missed too much to be able to go back. So they end up doing some sort of vocational course. So a lot of people I lived with at the time were in, like, outreach courses, for example. So for me, I'm very thankful to that woman because she helped me stay in school. So then when I had my son, when I was 14 when I got pregnant, 15 when I had him, I would have gone to grinds in the institute every weekend and did the holiday grinds as well, so that I could sit my junior cert mocks straight after I had him, literally a few weeks after I had him. And I'm so thankful to the people who did that. And even my care home then, you know, I was going to have to move out, as I described. And I suppose for they they decided to convert the home into a mother and baby home so that I could stay, so they could support me while I was going to school.
Amazing.
So things like that really helped me, you know. And so when I was, you have to move out when you're 18. Those are just the rules of being in care. So when I was moving out at 18, I understood how to be in college and how to study while having a small baby, you know.
You certainly did. You then went down to DCU. And what did you study?
Accounting and finance.
Of course you did. Accounting and finance. What was it like raising a child and going to college and having all of that, I mean, on your shoulders? What was that time like?
I think it was, I don't know any different, right?
Yeah.
It was just what it was, of course. And it was really funny because my friends would turn around to me and say, you were my motivation when I was studying. I'm like, Debbie's doing this with a child. And I was like, I wish I had someone that would be my motivation, because in the back of my mind, I was constantly thinking, this isn't something that's very visible to me. People who have been in care, who have gotten pregnant when they were teenagers, who have gone on to become accountants, right? Didn't know anybody that had done that. So I just would have this narrative in my head of, who do I think I am? I'm not a genius to think I can do this. So it was always just, I'm going to keep going and keep going because this is the one thing I want to try and provide for my son. But before every exam, that was the narrative. I didn't think I'd actually get through. It's that imposter syndrome of, yeah, I'm finally going to fail this one and this is where this journey is going to end. So for me, it was the people who, there was this incredible woman who I worked with, a counsellor called Cherie de Burgh, who's fortunately passed away. And she'd had her son when she was really young. And I started going to her when I was 14. But she really helped me. Like, she was always at the end of the phone when I had those pieces of doubt to help me keep going. And Liam's a great kid. We just found ways of doing it. Like, I have all these really cute pictures of me studying and him doing his colouring and at the other end of the colouring at the kitchen table. So it's something you just adapt to. That was the only thing I knew. I didn't know how to be in college without a kid. So that was, you just have to adapt to that situation.
So what happened after college?
Yeah, so after college, I got a job in an accounting firm, one of the big four, and I would have qualified as a chartered accountant. And then I moved into an area called people consulting, which I absolutely love, in Ernst & Young. And yeah, that's where I am now. I'm a manager there.
You were listed on the Forbes 30 under 30 list in 2020. Incredible. I mean, it's so great to have someone of your caliber with us. I mean, there's serious competition to get on that list. What is that process like? I mean, do you have to interview in advance? Was it a surprise? How does it all work?
I didn't think that I had any chance of getting on that. A friend of mine had gotten on it the year before, so he encouraged me to apply. And I was like, there's no way. Like, there's no way I'm going to get on this. There's just too much competition. You fill in like a very detailed application form, particularly talking about my charity and what we were hoping to achieve and the work that we were currently doing. And yeah, that's really it. And then you just don't hear anything for a while, and the morning of, refreshing my email, and I found out that I got it, and I just couldn't believe it. Like, it's one of those moments that I've had where I've been scared to go to sleep because, just in case I was dreaming it, that it happened. It's like the day I got my chartered accounting exams. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I kept checking, re-logging in to make sure I did.
Isn't
get
that
through.
Crazy? But you know the work you put into it. Yeah. I mean, you don't just get something like that without work, sitting down and doing the work. It's incredible. I want to talk about this for a sec, because you try now, I mean, you help people who were in a similar situation to yourself. Can you tell me about your organization, Empower the Family?
Yeah, so I set up Empower the Family specifically to deliver social student housing for people who are single parents and coming out of state care, and really people who are from disadvantaged backgrounds, who are on access programs. We are hearing so much on the news about the unaffordability of going to college for people who are even from middle class families.
Sure.
Think about how much harder it is for people who are literally classed as being in poverty, right?
Yeah.
So for me, that was really important, to create something that supported people in that way and put all of those services that they needed in one place. So we've been working with Dublin City Council on the first development, which will hopefully be in Ballymun. We have the site, we have treaty drawings, everything done. And it will be 20 apartments for single parents who are in college, and then 14 apartments for people who are coming out of state care who are also in college, with a creche on site and a community centre. So it's, even in terms of design of the two-bedroom apartments for the single moms, I very much taken into account how moms will study. So they need to be able to look in directly into their kids' playroom, you know, make sure they're okay. Because that was a big thing for me, being able to make sure my kid was okay while I was buried in a book for hours on end at study time. So it's just taking those things into consideration. That's obviously down the road from DCU, which would be very accessible. And then on the bus line then to go into UCD or Trinity or wherever people want to go. So it's all about breaking down those barriers which prevent them. It's not that people, single parents that want to go to college, there's thousands of single parents that are in college. They're just struggling. And it's the sustainability of it in terms of, right, you might only be able to afford a place in Balbriggan. Then the only community creche place you might be able to get is in Finglas. Yeah. And then you're going to college in Ballymore. That doesn't work. Eventually, you're not going to be able to continue that commute.
No.
So it's around the sustainability to help people stay in college. And what we know is that people from access programs, well, in DCU anyways, they have a higher level of success rates in terms of graduation than people, than the overall DCU rate. So if you support people in the right way, they will get there. And that's what I'm trying to do here, this whole concept.
Changing the narrative of people's lives with a little bit of help. It's incredible. Come here, how's Liam?
He's amazing. He's 13, towering over me.
Yeah. And he's in school and doing well.
He's
and
doing very well, yeah.
Okay, well, he's a lot to live up to. God, love him. It's lovely to have you in. The books are out today. I Believe in You is a picture book. I don't know where you get the time to do all this. A picture book for kids, Believing in Me, a memoir of Deborah's life. They're out today. Go and check it out. There's something in there for everyone. Deborah, thank you so much for coming into the show.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.